gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair and send him on his way.
The bathroom may be the most important room in the house. Its only real competitor, perhaps, being the kitchen. Can you think, House and Garden magazine inquired in 1926, of any room in the house which reflects the progress of comfort and of convenience more than the bathroom? Just bringing it inside the house was of major consequence, a seemingly simple act that required not only medical revelation and technological revolution, but the remaking of human habits as old as time. So argues our guest today, Merritt Ierley, a social historian whose books include Traveling the National Road, Open House, and the forthcoming The Comforts of Home, from which he wrote the article in the May-June issue of American Heritage magazine titled The Bathroom, an Epic. Welcome, Merritt, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Merritt, if we went to the water closet, as it was once known, would we recognize it as essentially what we have today, meaning our flush toilet?
Somewhat surprisingly, at least it struck me that way, the very early 1900s, it was still called a water closet. That terminology hung on from the earliest evolution of it into the 20th century, but in the book, I have an illustration of still called water closet from 1909 plumbing catalog that looks, if not exactly 1990s, at least like some of it is still in use. A low tank, it has a rather decorative tank, and it's very surprising that that early in the century you have essentially what looks like the modern toilet, and in fact works basically like it. The water closet had a very slow evolution up to roughly the turn of the 1900s, kind of hit modern, and really hasn't changed all that much over the course of the past century.
Well, let me just take you back a little bit. We won't go back into antiquity quite yet, but what about in the 17th century? Americans, as you suggest, went to the privy. Tell us about the privy.
Well, the privy is what a lot of people would call an outhouse, but in fact, outhouse, in terms of historic research, outhouse is a term I virtually never came up with. It's one of those terms that's been applied in retrospect. The privy was really the universal bathroom of its day. It was essentially a pit in the ground, one that I know of specifically that was written about in the 1700s, happened to be 16 feet deep, which gives you some rough idea of the dimensions of it. Then there was a structure built above the pit for the purpose of privacy and convenience, obviously, if it was raining or snowing. And within this structure was a seat that had one or two or more holes in it for obvious purpose. And the fact that there are multi-holes probably has suggested that it was used communally, and I suspect not. I think that people then enjoyed the same degree of privacy as they do today. But the bigger the pit, the less frequently it would have to be cleaned out. And if you're going to have a pit that's 10 feet across and you've got room for four holes, you put four holes in. But what it didn't mean that four people were going to use it at the same time. The privy was the universal form, the equivalent of the bathroom, actually well into the 20th century, until the water closet, by then coming to be called the toilet, became universal.
Can we assume that the name privy comes from the British and early American pronunciation of privacy? Is that correct?
I would assume so. Okay. I actually never looked up the etymology of it.
And when did it move inside?
Seems to make sense to me.
When did it move inside?
Well, in a sense, in terms of the American experience, the first water closet that's been documented is 1765, and that was built at Whitehall, the home of Governor Horatio Sharp of Maryland. And Whitehall was in Annapolis, and that is a documented use of a water closet in America in 1765. It was probably the first one in this country. There were probably no others at the time, and probably none at all until, no others at all until roughly the turn of the 1800s. Jefferson, for example, when he moved into the White House in 1801, had experience with water closets in France during his term as minister there, and the Adamses had had to use an outhouse. And when Jefferson got there in 1801, one of the first things he did was to order a water closet installed, but it took until 1804 for it to be in place. I think what I should do here is give some idea of what a water closet was like, and just touch very briefly on the evolution. There are actually devices in the nature of water closets in the ancient world, and there are comments by various archaeologists about seats or slabs with a groove, or a stone seat that would have a very obvious use, and probably a trough underneath or something of that sort. So there were water closets of a very, very primitive sort in the ancient world. But it was not until the 1600s in England that you began to find them developing and actually being used in the home. A very early form of it was basically a stone trough with a hole in the bottom and a plug and a handle and a connection to a cistern somewhere and a water cock. And when it was used, a handle was pulled up, a plunger came up, and the waste went down to a drain pipe, probably just into a privy vault underneath. Very primitive. The first new generation was 1778 in England with the patent of Joseph Bramah, and his water closet employed a valve now. This is the first real modern mechanism. And the Bramah water closet, in fact, his basic design, continued in use in England and to some extent in this country well through the 19th century. Valve closets generally were what we had in America through that period until roughly the 1890s, when the principle of the siphon was applied for the first time. The siphon, of course, goes back to the ancient world and was used in, well, by the Greeks as part of their water supply systems. In the case of its application in the water closet, the secret of the siphon is net atmospheric pressure. We think of the siphon as an inverted U because the weight of liquid in the shorter leg of the siphon tube is less, net pressure is greater, forcing liquid up and over the inverted U. The siphon came into use in roughly the 1890s for both the bowl and the tank. The net result is that the flushing action is much greater with a siphon than when a valve is opened and water merely flows down a drain by gravity. And since that evolution in the 1890s, there's been relatively little change except the use of color and some stylistic changes. Up until just the last few years, when the federal government mandated a maximum of 1.6 gallons per flush, and that required a little bit of adjustment, primarily in the form of a pressurized system or slight redesign of the toilet itself. But otherwise, it's been relatively little change.
Great. All right. Well, I want to make sure we get to the bathtub, but let me ask you just one more question before we move on to the bathtub, and that is, in your article, you talk a bit about some of the arguments for and against moving the toilet inside, if you will. Very briefly, what were the arguments against that?
The reason for bringing it in was convenience. And from our point of view, we would probably look back and wonder why anybody would have any resistance to it being brought in. The reason there was a certain amount of resistance is that the act of elimination had been associated for so long with the outdoors. One always went outdoors to use a privy, or if one used a chamber pot inside, one took it out and dumped it at the first opportunity. Elimination was something for the outdoors. And now, with the coming of the water closet, especially in the mid-1800s, people were being asked to complete inside a process that was traditionally something for the outside. It was a major change of habit, and a lot of people were suspicious that it wouldn't work. There was a problem with odor, a problem with noise. Some of the early ones were very noisy. And there was also the question of cost. These things were not cheap. The very first ones, going back to the early 1800s, were really quite expensive and totally priced outside the range of anybody we would identify as being middle class.
Interesting.
But in time, mass production brought the cost down, and in time, the necessity of developing the modern bathroom and the modern sewer system required eventually that everybody would have an indoor toilet, and that necessarily brought the cost down as well.
All right, well, when did the bathtub join the toilet in the bathroom?
Roughly the 1850s. There were bathtubs in use earlier than that, fixed tubs, fixed in place with plumbing outlets, water being piped in the early 1800s, but they were relatively rare and, again, quite expensive. Most people during the, in the colonial period, there were very, very few, the tubs in the colonial period are basically just small portable tubs. And in the early 1800s, you begin to find them coming in fixed in place, but in a separate location from the water closet.
Were there any changes here? We're talking about a change of location. Did this reflect or lead to any changes in bathing habits or attitudes toward cleanliness?
In the age when the daily shower is common, it's difficult to comprehend that people used to go not days but years without really bathing. In her diary, it's a marvelous diary written by Elizabeth Drinker of Philadelphia covering roughly the second half of the 18th century. She talks in 1799 about taking a shower bath and kind of a device that was improvised out in the outside using just a tippable pan over top of a little stall. And she talks in her diary about doing that and marvels over the fact that this was the first time she'd been wet in over 28 years, wet all over. The absence of convenient facilities for bathing certainly contributed to the notion that bathing wasn't very essential. So did age-old attitudes about bathing going back to the Middle Ages, and the idea that bathing was actually deleterious to one's health. Elizabeth Drinker was a solid, respected, responsible person, somebody undoubtedly conscientious about how she acted toward others and how she kept herself. And we have to understand her in the perspective of her times. Yet, attitudes were beginning to change, and they began to change fairly quickly, and not uncoincidentally, I think, in response to developing technology for making bathing easier. One can contrast Elizabeth Drinker's diary account in 1799 with, just a few years later, Eliza Farrar counseling in her book, The Young Lady's Friend, in 1836, that, quote, once at least in 24 hours, the whole surface of the body should be washed in soap and water. A pretty substantial change of attitude showing up just in a relatively short period.
I suppose we should thank her for that, but let me ask you just one last question, because we're right at the end in 30 seconds or less. How did this impact the architecture of the home itself?
The bathroom was obviously a fundamental part. I think in terms of evolution, let's take note of the fact that the bathroom traditionally has been on the second floor. And the reason for that is that the bathing, although full bathing in a tub was done in the kitchen, commonly because you had the hot water available at the fireplace or the stove, personal bathing was always done in one's bedroom, using a basin and sponge or something of that sort. And if one were using a chamber pot inside, one would use it in the bedroom, in the privacy of one's room. So that when the bathroom came into use, combining both the water closet and the bathtub, the logical place for it was on the second floor adjacent to the bedrooms. So that was how it got to that particular place. And, of course, since then, where it's affordable, people like to have them upstairs and downstairs. And if there's one on the first floor, it's frequently called the powder room, another euphemism, right. Although not a new one.
Right. Well, thank you, Merritt. We're out of time, but we really enjoyed it. The bathroom certainly does have an epic history.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You've been listening to Merritt Ierley, author of The Bathroom, an Epic, that appeared in the May-June issue of American Heritage Magazine, and The Comforts of Home, a book to be published in October by Random House Clarkson Potter Publishers. This is Talking History.